Hello and welcome to the Stateside Soccer Show. My name is Jordan. With me, as always, is Logan. How are you, Logan?
Doing well, Jordan. How you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, it was the trade deadline day today in Major League Soccer, and the Orioles got Jack Flaherty. Wrong sport. Sorry.
Oh, that's right.
The LA Galaxy got Diego Fagundes. But yeah, we'll talk about the transfer deadline day for Major League Soccer. They had, you know, like their internal transfer deadline day. And I think it was also just the last time they could make transfers as a whole. So we have that. We have U.S. Women's World Cup talk to talk about. And we also have the League's Cup. The 32 teams are set, Logan, and your Orlando are gonna have to take on Messi Magic in Miami.
Yeah, I'm interested to see just how many goals that he can put up against that Orlando defense. So I'm not looking forward to that at all. As far as a City fan, as far as a Miami, just kind of looking at it from an objective standpoint, that's a really exciting rivalry. I just wish Orlando could sign somebody of similar magnitude, but I guess we'll just take Facundo Torres for what he is, an Arsenal wannabe. So I guess that's what we'll call him.
I do want to start with the U.S. Women's because this was a big match that they had to. You'd like to say had to win. They didn't have to win it. Obviously, they got through with a draw. But this team, outside of that first game, really hasn't looked kind of what we thought they should be looking like. And this was kind of my worry, you know, going into the Women's World Cup, because we're thinking other nations have caught up to us. And I also just don't think Vlatko is that good of a coach. You know, he has trouble substituting sometimes. It's just the tactics have not been great. And, you know, they fell behind to the Netherlands, who was a good team. Netherlands was a, you know, what runner up when we just won the World Cup last time. We beat them then, but, you know, they took the lead against us. We came back, clawed back, and drew on the 26th of July. And then this morning, 0-0 against Portugal, and the too much to us here. We got outplayed by possession. We had more shots. We had more big chances, but there was a moment kind of late in the game here where Portugal hit the post, and the post saved the USA from getting bounced out. If they got bounced out in the group stage, Logan, this would have been an unmitigated disaster. And I mean, at this point, I think if we don't win it, it's going to be time to move on from Vlatko. It's going to be time to move on from some of these players. Rapinoe hasn't looked great. There's a reason why she's coming off, you know, the bench and only playing 20 minutes a game, and you know, she's 38. She's already said she's retiring, so obviously they're moving on from her. But you know, it hasn't been a good World Cup really at all. You even had Alex Morgan miss the penalty against you know, in that first game against Vietnam. So Morgan still hasn't scored a World Cup goal, and you know, the rest of the front line is very young, so you're worried about how long it's going to take them to, you know, they're inexperienced right now, and you're on the big stage, you know, and you have to now go play a knockout game where you haven't looked good all, you know, all World Cup, really, the last week. They didn't look good in that Netherlands game. They didn't look good in this game. I got a message from Jack because he stayed up to watch it. He said, he texted me before it started. He said, I decided to stay up for the women's game. I woke up and saw the score and I was like, and I saw the reports, you know, and the highlights. And I was like, sounds like it wasn't a good one. He said, I regret staying up. Yeah. And also, let's talk about Fox real quick. They told everyone that coverage starts at 1 a.m. So they wanted people to watch 2 hours of pregame at a 1 a.m. at a 3 a.m. kickoff on a work day. That's kind of a dick move, Fox. And I don't know. I saw somebody say this too, and I agree. It's like, wouldn't that just piss more people off if you wake up at 1 o'clock, Logan, to turn on the game and it says countdown to kickoff 2 hours? Wouldn't you be pissed off that Fox told you to tune in at 1 a.m.?
Yeah, 100%. Although Jordan, I don't even know what 1 a.m. looks like anymore, unless it's Halloween Horror Nights and I've somehow drank two or three coffees. 3 a.m. I don't even know. Like, are people alive during that time? Like, is that like a normal time for people to kind of like stay up to? I think you're on mute.
I said that's the time I'm actually doing most of my work, actually, is 3 a.m.
Oh, are you? Okay. Yeah, I did. I knew you were a big gym guy, like a gym rat. I know
that. Oh, yeah, exactly. Like that type of work is what I meant. Yes. yeah. The working out type of work.
Yeah. Yes.
I am dead asleep at 3 a.m.
Yeah, no. If you woke me up at 3 a.m., I would be so lost as to where I was, what my name was. I would be rooting for the wrong team. I'd have like Bluey on or something. I'd be so confused, disoriented. Big Bluey fan here, but yeah, no. I hate that the world, like, I love New Zealand. We're hoping to go over there sometime soon. We got friends over there, but I hate like when they're in. World Cups are in Asia because it's so hard to watch these games and I want to watch them. Like, I wish we could do like the 9 p.m. games, like keep that. Like, why is that not? Could you imagine like just looking at the ratings and you get a 3 o'clock game and you're like, oh, gosh, like nobody's going to watch this unless they're in college. Just like staring drunkenly at the TV going, hey, that's the girls team.
Yeah. I don't know how people do it. I know for people like it's their job to wake up and watch this stuff to cover it and all that, but I had to drive into the office today, which means I was waking up early as it was, and there was no way I was waking up that early to then go drive into the office for an hour commute after the game ended. I would have been too exhausted. But look, this team, I don't know if they have it to go all the way. I saw some people getting on Carly Lloyd for her comments, which were, you're lucky not to be, you know, out of the World Cup, and that she doesn't think some of these players are playing for the team, that she thinks some of them are playing for their brand and stuff like that. And I think sometimes when people automatically dismiss that because they either don't like Carly Lloyd, they don't like, you know, things she says or whatever, but I mean, she was the captain of this team. She knows these players better than anyone else. You know, she just got out of the game and just started doing coverage and play-by-play recently. So I have to give her a little bit of, like, she's credible, right? Like, she probably knows these players and stuff better than I would. But I just hope that they can sort it out. It just seems like there's no plan. You know, Vlatko is always preaching, oh, we're not panicking or whatever. It's like, yep, you might want to start panicking a little bit, or, you know, not like at that level, right? Like, I don't want them to panic the way we're panicking, but I want them to panic in a way of like light a fire under their butt so they can start, you know, playing better. And it's not just all about heart and stuff too. So like when Carly Lloyd says that, it's not just about that, because obviously there are other teams that have played their heart out and still get bounced out. So you can't really say it's because of that, but I do want to just, highlight something here. So this was from ESPN Stats and Info. The U.S. has been in its least dominant form at a Women's World Cup in over a decade, scoring its fewest goals, 4, in a group stage since 2011. This was also the first time that the Americans did not win their group since 2011 World Cup in Germany. The U.S. did, however, score multiple goals in each knockout stage match and made the final that year. So it's not all doom and gloom, but look, they only scored 4 goals. 3 of them is in one game, right? And then the other one was a late equalizer, and then none in this game. Now, I also want to preach that statistically, this was the hardest group. We looked at that last week or 2 weeks ago, right before this thing kicked off. I looked at all of the FIFA rankings, and ours ours were all top 32 teams. No one else had that. So that's over. That's, you know, we're moving on. Just get through. Just kind of like how we said with the men's this year, right? Like last year. Just get to that knockout and see what happens. So that is the next goal here for the women now is, all right, put whatever dysfunctional stuff the first, you know, group stage was, put that behind you and now look ahead to the knockouts and make a run here. That 2011 team, though, they lost in the final to Japan. So this might be a little bit of foreshadowing that maybe we're not going to get that fifth World Cup this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as adversity, I mean, we don't really face a ton of it as the U.S. women's national team. I will say that I would, again, this group was very difficult. Just some stats, though, to kind of throw at you that really do help. I love this article that was written because it had, obviously, it mentions Pep. It's on NBCSports.com. I can't actually find the author, though. But it goes in and basically it's talking about the idea that Pep would hate looking at the possession because we hardly hold possession. It's a lot of go, 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 go with U.S. women's national team. But everything else is a really bright spot and probably actually stacks up the favors against other teams that come up against us. 17-6 as far as goal chances, as far as shots on goal, shots on target. I think we put 6 on target. We put a ton on Vietnam. I think 28 shots against Vietnam. You look at all the stats. You have expected goals against. We're number 1. Expected goals scored. We're in the top 5. So you also have to remember that this is a young team, especially a lot of our front. There's a lot of players that have not played in the World Cup. Honestly, the players that have probably been the ones that we're kind of hoping for more of a boost from them. Blacko's had a lot of people that he's had on the bench that I think, you know, you kind of look at that roster like a Kelly O'Hara. If you look at Lynn Williams, like those are
Rose Lavelle.
Rose Lavelle.
Did she start today? Because she didn't start the first 2 games. Like, you know, there's some things going on here where you're like, I just want to know what the plan is.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you look at that. You look at everything kind of stacked up. Are we heavy favorites? No. I think there's a good chance you could lose in this next couple rounds. But again, to reach around a 16, I mean, no matter how good your team is, that's still quite a feat. I mean, you get to the round of 8, you're one of the top 8 teams in the world. I mean, there's a lot of positive to take from this. But we're in the changing of the guard, right? I think last World Cup was really kind of the flame that was going out in a lot of their careers. I think a lot of them were in their prime. I think a lot of them are off of their prime now. Megan Rapinoe's not really starred in anything. So there's been that, you know, shift. And I think we knew this was coming. It's kind of like with the U.S. men's national team on the other side. It's like we had a gap in that generation. This new generation is the one that's coming. Well, it's the same kind of thing with the women's. That old generation's now flamed out. And now we're trying to piece things together until the younger generation comes, because I think this young generation is good. They're just not experienced yet. So it happens. This is what happens with national teams. I think we've been pretty darn lucky that our women's national team have been so dominant for so long. But it's those kind of spells that you go through, right? Spain, U.S. men's, or sorry, the men's national team for Spain, they dominated for a decade. Like it just felt like they dominated everything. Feels like now France, I would say Brazil, like they're the ones that kind of are the front runners. Argentina, like you go through these windows. I mean, if you think about it, it all makes sense. Every 4 years you're playing in this tournament. Well, after about the third cycle through, those players have been playing for 12 years and at the end of their careers. So I think that's a lot, but basically off that rant, just, I think the women's national team is fine. It's just a lot of inexperience. And I think you're right, Jordan. I don't think Blacko is really the guy that's going to be at the helm for much longer. So it'll be interesting to see how they kind of move forward from here. Greg Berhalter might be available soon. So,
yeah, we'll see, I guess. All right, let's move on and talk the MLS Liga MX Leagues Cup round of 32. The group stage finished yesterday, which is why we're recording on a Tuesday here. But Tigres won their group with 6 points. Portland finished second with 3. San Jose eliminated with 0 points. In West 2, you had Monterey and Salt Lake move on. Monterey with 6, Salt Lake with 3. Seattle eliminated with 0 points out of their two games. They had a lead on Monterey and then blew it. West 3, Club Lyon and Vancouver move on with 5 and 4 points. LA Galaxy eliminated with 0 points. Central 1, Columbus Crew won the group with 6 points. Club America in second with 3, and St. Louis eliminated with 0 points. Central 2 was a little closer here. Chicago won the group with 4 points. Minnesota finished second with 3, and Puebla gets eliminated with 2 points. They got 2 points because of a loss in penalty shootouts, and then also a regular draw, I think. Right? Oh, no, they drew and then must have won in shootout. Sorry, for them to have 2 points. Just trying to figure out how they had 2 when everybody else had 3 and 4. Central 3, Cincinnati wins the group with 5 points. Sporting Kansas City finishes second with 4. Chivas, Guadalajara, eliminated. Over in Central 4, Toluca wins the group with 6 points. Nashville comes in second with 3, and Colorado finishes with 0. Over in South 1, Mazatlan wins the group with 5 points. Juarez moves on with 4 points, and Austin eliminated with 2 points. They played awful against those two teams, teams that they probably could have and should have beaten. Over in South 2, Orlando wins with 5 points. Houston moves on with 3, and Santos Laguna is eliminated with 1 point. South 3, Miami finishes first with 6 points. Cruz Azul in second with 2. Atlanta eliminated with 1 point. South 4, Charlotte moves on with 5 points. Dallas moves on with 4, and Necaxa moves on, is eliminated, sorry, with 0 points. That'd be some feat to move on with 0 points. Philadelphia Union win their group, East 1, with 6 points. Corotaro finishes with 3 points, and Tijuana is eliminated with 0 points. Over in East 2, okay, hold on. My mouse just started scrolling all the way down to the bottom. Over in East 2, Pumas wins the group with 4 points. DC United moves on with 3, and Montreal is eliminated with 2. Over in East 3, Club Atlas moves on with 6. New York City FC move on with 3, and Toronto continue their losing ways without Bob Bradley, and it is 0 points for Toronto. Over in East 4, New York Red Bulls win the group with 5. New England finish with 4. And San Luis are eliminated with 0 points. Which means, over in our knockout stage, we have LAFC, who've been waiting in the wings here, kicking off tomorrow at 10:30 against FC Juarez. Then we also have on 8-2 at 8 o'clock, Miami versus Orlando. Battle for Florida. Battle for shades of purple and pink. Kind of like, you know, the same sort of color, but just lighter. I think it's funny. They have 2 of the most, I think, unique color schemes in the league. It's going to be cool to see them.
Florida sunset colors. Gold, purple, pink.
Black.
Black like our soul.
Yeah. Okay. 8-2, also at 9 o'clock, is Pachuca versus Houston. Pachuca's been, you know, waiting in the wings here as well, for having the best record, you know, or winning Liga Mekis. Over on 8-3, we have Club Lyon and RSL. That game's going to be on FS1, by the way. That's at 10:30. We also have the Union versus DC United at 8 o'clock on Thursday. And we have Oh, a Hudson River Derby. Red Bull New York versus NYCFC at 8 o'clock. That's pretty fun. And then the winner of that game will go on to face the winner of Philly and DC. We also have on 8-3 at 8 o'clock, Pumas versus Querétaro. We also have Club Atlas and New England at 8 o'clock. Then we have, also on 8-2, by the way, I missed this one, at 9 o'clock, is Dallas and Mazatlan facing each other. And that's that whole side of the bracket there. Well, also we have Charlotte and Cruz Azul on 8-3 at 8:30. And that's one side of the bracket. Over on the other side, like I said, you had LAFC and Juarez, Club Leon and RSL. And then on 8-4, we also have, at 8 o'clock, Cincinnati and Nashville, Chicago Club America, that's on FS1, Toluca and SKC at 9 o'clock, Columbus Crew and Minnesota United at 8, Monterrey and Portland at 10 o'clock, that's also on FS1, and Tigres versus Vancouver at 10:30. So, obviously, people are saying that the easiest side of the bracket is that south side in the round of 32 with Miami and Orlando. If Miami gets to Orlando, they will face either Dallas or Mazatlan. And then from there, they would go on to face the winner of Charlotte and Cruz Azul or Pachuca and Houston. And then from there, they would go on to face whoever wins out of the north side, which is like Philly, DC, Red Bull, NYCFC, Pumas, Querétaro, and Club Atlas in New England. Do you agree with that? Do you think Miami has a chance here to run all the way up to it with Messi here? Or is this a little bit more fluid situation?
One thing, could you do me a huge favor and send a link to me of the actual bracket? I can't find it anywhere.
Yeah, you know, this took a while to find, by the way. MLS did not make it easy.
It's on there. I'm on the bracket channel. Like, I'm on the bracket tab. It's not there. Like, it doesn't exist. It's like, oh, this does not exist. Like, there's a schedule. There we go. What? Okay, there. Thank you. What the heck? Like,
I'll share it for the viewers here too.
Yeah, you can't find it anywhere. This is annoying. I was like looking at the games, but I couldn't find out who was playing who. I knew Miami played, obviously, Orlando. But yeah, so kind of looking at this, I would say yes. Like on that side, that south side of that bracket too. Yeah. I mean, I would say Miami's got a pretty easy road through. But man, is that tough. That... That side of the bracket is only good in that quarter, because once you get up to where the Union are, that's not easy. that top half of that, no thanks. Like Atlas, no thank you. Pumas, no thank you. Philly, nope. That's a tough part of that group. So, but yeah, I would say out of both sides, I would say we've got the easier side, because that other side of the bracket's stacked. So, yeah, I don't know. Miami's got a pretty easy run through. But, I mean, those aren't, like, teams. Like, Pumas isn't that bad. Atlas is not bad. Philly, I think, is really good. So, yeah, I don't – gosh, I guess just looking at this side of the bracket, though, my Lord. Like, yeah, I'd much rather be on the side that Miami's in. But I mean, it's not like they're running through easy teams.
No, because they'll still have Pachuca on that side if at some point, right? And they had a whole bye. So, I mean, it's not...
Cruz Azul, too, is on that side.
And Cruz Azul, yeah. Well, until Charlotte knocks them out, yeah.
Right.
man, I think MLS has a pretty decent shot at this, actually. I feel like the Liga MX teams have been a little underwhelming. There's even been a few slip-ups where they kind of just pulled out of it, and you're thinking, oh, if we could have just... You know, if that MLS team could have just played a little better. I mean, really, Austin should be in here, too. They should not have lost to those two teams that they lost to. They are not two of the best Liga MX teams or anything. So, you know, I see frustration from Austin fans on there as well. And especially after the trade that they made today. We'll get to that in a little bit. But, you know, it's just, I think we got a pretty good... shot here. I think a team like the Union or a team like NYCFC, Miami, I think they can go pretty far to carry that side of the bracket, maybe even get to the final. And then over here on the West, I think, you know, obviously LAFC could, but they've been kind of in and out of form this year, and they've now had a long layoff. So I'm curious to see how they're going to play. Now they have a pretty easy team compared to what other teams are going to have. But then you're also going to get like Tigres on that side of Monterrey. I think the Crew can make a good run. They've been pretty impressive recently. Minnesota's been pretty darn good with Pookie now too, but you know, they did just lose to the Fire after Kai Kamara won. You know, Kai Kamara's just been absolutely great pickup for Chicago. He's been scoring goals. He's absolute legend. But they have to go up against Club America, so you don't know how long they're going to last. And I think Cincy can do well too. And they have to go up against Nashville. So I found myself watching more of the non-MLS matchups, right, in the group stage. I was kind of picking out, looking for those Liga MX MLS teams. But I think now that we're in the round of 32, some of these MLS matches are really sticking out to me. I'm really curious to see how the Union are going to do with DC. I don't think you're going to get like a 7-0 win like you did last year, right? Like twice. And Nashville's tricky for Cincy, I feel like. Sometimes Nashville can really turn it on, and sometimes they can really just not do much at all. So I'm curious to see how Cincy will do against them. And of course, I think Crew Minnesota is actually one of the best matchups in this little bracket here, because like I said, Minnesota's been playing pretty well. Halong Wayne has been scoring. Pookie has been scoring. It's very interesting to see that Minnesota team. And then the Crew, who just won like 4-1 the other day. And the downside with the Crew here, right, is that to kind of also talk transfers at the same time as this, they have announced yesterday that they are moving on from Lucas Ellerón. They've accepted a transfer. He's going to Al Fateh in the Saudi Pro League. It doesn't say for how much money, but like somebody else specified, if they didn't say it was a record-breaking fee, then it probably wasn't, which means that I think the record-breaking fee that they've transferred somebody to was Zach Steffen for 7 mil or somewhere around there. So they didn't sell Zellerion for that much, or else they would have probably been bragging about selling for, you know, a record deal. But so I'm a little upset that Zellerion is leaving, right? Him and Mukhtar are the type of players I feel like you have to hold on to. Carlos Heel are the type of players you have to hold on to in this league because they're fun to watch. They're quality. They help you win championships. Ellerón did win one with the Crew, so that's at least good. You didn't like just throw it away like you're the New York Mets at transfer trade deadline day. So, you know, like you're, but it still hurts, I think, if you're a Crew fan, because they've started to look a lot better recently. You're thinking, oh, maybe we can win League's Cup. Maybe we can make a run in the playoffs. And then you just lose like your best player. That sucks. That sucks a lot.
Yeah. This is a tough, like, this is kind of where we're at though, I feel, with a lot of teams. I mean, I think you have similar situations where you had like a Brenner, Brandon Vasquez, where there are better leagues and there are also leagues that are going to pay you a lot more money. And now we've really entered this weird time where, and thank goodness Messi chose the U.S. because he could easily have done what Ronaldo did and completely disappear off the map, pretty much has no brand at all. Nobody's watching the Saudi league except for the people that are over maybe in Europe that are just wanting to watch Cristiano, but you don't hear much about him anymore. Like randomly, like Bleacher Report Soccer will tweet about him or something. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like he's over there, but I would never turn on Saudi TV like to watch.
I don't even think they're carried by anyone. Right? Actually,
I think Sky is the only one that does. And it's over there.
Yeah. And over here, I don't think anybody, yeah, none. No. Yeah. Even have Sadio Mane moving there. He just moved to Bayern from Liverpool last year. Now he's already making a run over there. It's kind of odd how this always happens. This is like exactly what happened 10 years ago with the China deal, right? Like China happened and did the same thing where they were buying all these players all the time, and that fell apart. That fell apart pretty quickly after they got players and stuff. So I don't think it's a huge threat to us or stuff, but the one thing you didn't want to do is really like lose players to it, especially players of Zellerion's caliber. Now, if you're, you know, a Union fan or a New England fan, you're probably thinking, hey, that's actually pretty decent because there goes some of our competition for the East and competition for, you know, making a run in the East playoffs. Now, of course, the Crew may replace him with something later on, but you know, if you're a rival team, you're like, oh, that's great. Get him out of here. It just sucks as a fan of the league and wanting to see more of these type of players, seeing a player like that go. That's why we were so mad when the fake Mukhtar transfer was happening. It's because I was like, man, I really, you know, want to hold on to this. I don't fault like the league for transferring them if they got a deal that they felt was, you know, like the team for transferring them if they felt like they got a good deal and they already have a replacement lined up or something. But, you know, with the way that they've been playing lately and stuff, I just felt like they were primed to. I've always kind of been high on them with Wilfred Nancy, right? And how he's been playing them. When I saw them live, they looked pretty good in that first week. They just lost by a decimated amount. They were destroyed, but they were so close to putting it together, and then seeing them kind of like this. It is a little different than like, I feel like what we see in other sports, right? Because in baseball, this happens all the time. And in other sports, this happens where they become what we call sellers, right? In the like, oh, we're not actually good this year, so we're going to sell so that way we can recoup with prospects or money and make our way forward. But it doesn't really happen in our sport that much. In soccer here, everybody's a seller. Everybody sells somebody, right? And they're always going to go buy another player to replace it. It's a little different. It's not like you can just be like, well, this isn't our year, let's trade some players, because it's not really how our sport works. And it's not also how MLS is structured. They don't really have any benefits of doing that. And a big trade that kind of, I think, confused some people, especially in Austin, was the trade for Diego Fagundes. Is traded from Austin. He's one of the first players to play for them, right? He was like one of the first deals from the Revs. He goes to LA Galaxy, while now Austin is going to receive Memo Rodriguez. And I wonder kind of what prompted this. You know, Diego Fagundes is very loved in Austin. All the fans really loved him and thought he did very well. But really, he's 28. He's been playing since he's like 18. He had, or younger. He hasn't even really, I think, fully put together a really great season. So it's not a shock that Austin might be looking to move him. I just wonder what LA gains from this too. Because again, I don't think he's that big of a difference maker at this point. And I mean, LA Galaxy need as much of a difference maker as they can. They're 7 points off of a playoff spot. But also Austin, you know, you're in a playoff spot. You're in fifth place. What are you doing getting rid of a player like this? I don't really understand where this is working on either of the two teams' side.
Yeah, I remember last year, I think he was arguably the favorite amongst the crowd as far as Austin fans are concerned, and Diego. So it is interesting to me. Played 19 games, 14 starts for Austin. Does have only has two goals this season. I'm trying to see what his output was last year. I think it was pretty high from what I remember last year. Like, it was more impressive. Yeah, 6 goals and 12 assists. So like that was a really good year that he came off of last year. So it's not the same year he's obviously putting together this year.
Drop off this year.
Yeah. And I think that's always kind of been the case with Diego, is that, like you said, Jordan, he's never really put it all together. But also, I mean, that's a lot of money coming back, though. Like, for Diego, you're also getting not only Memo Rodriguez, who's an average midfielder in this league, and then 900,000 in GAM. But again, it just, it makes you wonder if Austin has plans to spend that money eventually soon to do something with. I don't really know what the idea was in behind it. I think it's more of a future move, and Austin's really, you know, they've been in a tough spot this year where I think, you know, coming off of such a high last year, right? I mean, you're fifth this year, but you're not quite, like, you're not to the level in which you were last year. Drewsy's not ever going to get back to that level.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't think it's possible. I think with injuries that he deals with, I think that with just a natural regression and the numbers, I remember talking about this, you and I talked about this at the very beginning of the year, and we said that, like, he had surpassed every single expectation based off of just numbers alone. Like, he was way above the numbers said he would be. And I think he's kind of come back down to that earth where, I mean, Austin, again, without Diego and without Jerusi playing like they did last year, like, that's a sizable, you know, regression in, I think, just the talent in this roster. And I think that's ultimately why the move's made. But I do love interleague trades, don't you? Like, I feel we just don't get, you don't get that a lot.
This, like, is what we need more of, you know, is in this type of thing, especially when I'm trying to make these damn immaculate grids for MLS. You're like, oh, you know, free agency is even pretty new in Major League Soccer, and you know, some of these trades sometimes are just a player for cash. Like, I love the fact that there was a player going the other way. It's exciting. I think that's why people really like when they are looking at NBA trades or baseball trades. Football trades don't usually end up trading player for player. A lot of times it becomes a lot of player for draft pick type of stuff. But I love when it's player for player, because that is something you can tangibly, like, did this trade work out? Right? Did this trade work out? How good was Memo the rest of the year? How good was Diego the rest of the year? You can figure that out. When you say, I trade you, Diego Fuentes, for $100 million fake dollars that I'm going to spend on five players, did I win the trade? Depends if those five players see the field and actually play well. You know, like, you need to be able to have a way to say, did somebody win the trade or not, if you're having trades in your league, because it creates discussion. This is the type of stuff we talk about when we talk about, like, storylines. Talks about, it's discussion. Next time those two teams play against each other, I don't even know if they do, but if they do, like, there's a story there now, right? Like, oh, Diego Fuentes, can he prove to Austin he was worth it and, you know, beat his old team against them? And, oh, maybe Memo's going to score against his old team. That stuff builds storylines that you can kind of have fun with and not just, like, you know, whatever, right? Like, we don't get a lot of interleague transfers. You can replicate it with transfers too, because we get those storylines with, like, Chelsea and United, right? Where, like, oh, you know, here's a Chelsea player that used to play, like, Mason Mount. Now he's going to United. And when they play against each other, that's going to be brought up. And there's intrigue. How will he play against his former team? A lot of times we end up shipping these players out to a different league, and then it's like, oh, we'll never see him again. So the more that you keep players in this league and you have this type of stuff, I really enjoy it. Had some other big signings here. Inter Miami have locked down a rising Argentine star. They have announced that they have signed center back Tomas Aviles from Racing Club. He's 19 years old. He's now under contract through 2026 MLS season, and he has options for 2027-2028. He is the club's third U22 initiative acquisition this summer alone, which were Facundo Farias, who's a forward, and Paraguayan international Diego Gomez, a midfielder. But yeah, I like this again. You know, Miami is really starting to put together a squad. They have a draw now with Messi as well for players that are like, why would I want to go there? Oh, I can play with the best player of all time? Sure. I'll go over there. Oh, and you'll also maybe flip me and sell me for a bigger team over in Europe later. Sounds great. Like, I get paid on time, right? Like, there's multiple factors that really can help determine that. But if you're going to Miami, you're probably thinking, I'm playing with Messi, and that's pretty cool. Even if I'm a defender, I'm not, and maybe I'm not feeding the ball to him. I'm seeing him in the locker room every day. I'm chatting with him. He's in the group text now. He's maybe getting me beats by Dre, right? Like all that kind of stuff that Messi just did is probably like, yeah, I would give a lot to be like, I'm going to go play for him. I'm going to go play with him. So that's a big transfer for them. The Rapids have traded Brian Acosta to Portland Timbers for $325,000 in GAM. So there you go. There's that fake money we were talking about. We'll see if that does anything for the Rapids. I think it helps Portland out quite a bit. Charlotte FC and Andre Shinashiki have mutually agreed to terminate the contract that they had. He's 26 years old. He's, you know, he was acquired in May last year from the Rapids. He scored 7 goals and an assist in 28 games for Charlotte. And he's only had 5 appearances this season before he cut ties with Charlotte to go sign for Netfisi PFK over in Azerbaijan Premier League. So they terminate his contract and he just left. Charlotte's going to get nothing for him. Kind of blows. Any thoughts on Shinashiki?
I mean, I think a good rotational piece if somebody wanted to go add a goal scorer. I think he's always been kind of that second striker, right? I mean, I feel like...
Yeah, he's been a little inconsistent recently, but yeah. He used to be a little better. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I mean, if you're a player, like, oh, hell, Nashville or somebody like that, like, why not, right? Like, sign him up, goes on a run, then you've done what you needed to add in some goal scoring. I think it's always good to have, like, a second option, especially with somebody of his caliber of also, I mean, we talk about this all the time, right? It's like that second player off the bench needs to have MLS experience because they become a valuable weapon that a lot of teams just don't have. Mm-hmm. I think that's ultimately what you have. I think that was what always made Tesho enticing for Perea, but it just never worked out. So at least in Orlando, but it had in the past. So, you know, I think it's familiarity with this league, being able to score in this league. It's kind of like a Jovalić, like having that presence that's just going to come in and get you goals. I think a second striker is a lot more dangerous than a lot of people think. Especially in this day and age, because nobody plays a full season anymore. So,
yeah. NYCFC have acquired a forward, Julian Fernandez, from Argentinian top flight Vélez Sarsfield. He's 19 years old. He's now under contract through the 2027 season, and he has an option for 2028, and he's taken up a U22 roster spot for NYCFC. He scored 7 goals and 2 assists in 60 competitions for Vélez Sarsfield in Argentina. I think that's most of like the big moves here. We already talked about Crew moving them. Red Bulls have signed Juan Jose Mina from a club in Colombia. He's also a Colombia defender. Crew have acquired Rudy Camacho from Montreal. Yeah, that's most of the big moves here. But I think the Union were linked to a striker overseas. That doesn't look like that's been announced yet. So guess we'll see. All right. Anything else about any of these storylines we talked about today? Transfers, Leagues Cup, Women's World Cup.
No, I mean, I think U.S. Women's National Team, like, I guess panic meter, like, I'd put it right about a 7. Like, they're not as strong as they were in previous World Cups. I think they've got enough talent to dominate the field if it all comes together in the right way. So, like, that's saying something, right? I think, that, you know, they're in a good spot. Like, You want to get to the round of 16. We hardly ever get to the round of 16, obviously, with U.S. men's national team. So we don't have a lot of familiarity with that territory unless it's going to be the U.S. women's national team. I'd say arguably the best national team we've ever put together across all sports. As far as dominance, maybe the dream team for the NBA. But again, I just think that this women's national team, I think anything that is unsettling is not comfortable territory or territory we're used to with this. Like, we're so used to this club just throttling people and making the big storylines and making the news and being out there in front. And just kind of going off of, like, I know you were talking about Carly Lloyd's comments. I think also, though, you got to think about the fact that these women are young women. Like, they're young players who've never been on this stage, who this is a really big thing for them. Like, this moving on in the group of death, like, this is a big move into the next round to play in the round of 16. And, you know, not dominating the group like we should, or not finishing in the first spot like we should. Like, it, none of that really matters. These players are going to, you know, I guarantee these players are not sitting there thinking about, like, oh, we usually dominate, what's going on? These players are thinking, we're on to the next round. All you have to do in a World Cup now is win a game. It doesn't matter how you do it. So I think that's where everybody gets so caught up. And especially, it's a sport. It's true in sports. Like, we just have this mentality as a fan to go, oh, crap, like, their players are probably freak. No, they're not. These players, they're not built that way. Like, there might be some pressure, but it's in all sports. Like, I remember watching the Cubs make their run in baseball. It was that similar thing where it's like, and I'm sure you've seen it with the Union. I'm sure you've seen it with, well, I guess what will be the Orioles run this year. Like, it's just that, like, it's the next game. Like, it's just, we're on to the next one. They're not thinking about how they did in the group stage. They don't care. They made it out, and that's the ultimate goal in a World Cup. So, I don't know. I'm not too much in on buying the. Do I think momentum matters? Yes, but I don't think that the players are going to be sitting there in this next game going, shit, we didn't get out of the group.
Right.
It's just not something we think about. So, yeah, it doesn't make sense.
All righty. Well, yeah, I'll say my panic meter is at an 8. How about that? I'll one up you on that. I'm a little panicked because, look, and I know we're spoiled. We've won 4 of these, but this is to be expected, right? Like, this team has high expectations. It's like when a Astros fan or a Yankees fan is upset they don't win the World Series every year. It's, yeah, or the Patriots don't win a Super Bowl every year. Yeah, you've seen 7 of them, right? But it's expected to be competitive. It's expected for you to go and put together a team like that. And we are spoiled as a U.S. women's national team fan that we've seen it. We just saw it last World Cup, and we're already hungry for another one. We would kill for this if we were watching the men's, you know, but it's the expectation because we've always been good in this team, and we're always ranked number one pretty much, and we're always the heavy favorite. And when that happens, the pressure's on a little bit more. And that might be getting to them a little bit, or it might be getting to the coach a little bit, which maybe is affecting tactics and stuff. I don't know. But, yeah, I wish we could, like, get a hold of former players and be like, how big of a thing is this? Like, you know, cause, like, you'll hear it both ways at times, you know, where you're listening to interviews with people and they're like, yeah, we weren't really thinking about it. But then you do have somewhere it's like, yeah, we were thinking, like, we were going to do super well, and now we're sucking, and it's like, we can't figure out why, type of thing. So yeah, I would love to be able to, how much does the media pressure get to you? Cause this is what we talk about with the men's, like when people say, oh, we don't have enough pressure on the men's team. Well, this women's team has pressure every 4 years, and they didn't look up to it, you know, today. So does that make your national team better? Not really. Right. I don't think pressure really does much to the national team. I don't think media asking questions does much the way that people want it to be. When people are saying, hey, you guys are not asking, you know, Greg Berhalter the tough questions. There's so much scrutiny with the women's team, and guess what? That's not really helping them at all right now. I don't think so. I think sometimes people put too much stock in that as well. You know, the players are going to be professionals, they're going to go do their stuff, but we do have some young players that have never been in this situation. That's probably going to happen every few cycles. But I think we'll wrap it up there. It's a pretty busy day. Pretty busy day. I'm actually surprised we talked less than an hour about that stuff. But really, all the big fun kicks off tomorrow with the League's Cup round of 32. This is what I've been looking forward to at the League's Cup. The group stage was fun. Messi gave us some great moments. We didn't talk about it this week, but you know, he even scored in game two, right? He scored a couple goals. He had an assist. Like, he's been looking pretty much promised, as advertised. And now he has to go up against Logan's Orlando, so we'll see how that goes. But, you know, the round of 32 is what I've been really looking forward to the League's Cup, because now this is where the real pressure happens. You can win meaningless group stage games in a meaningless competition that is in its first iteration. Fine. Now they have to go up against some of these good Liga Mekis teams in a do-or-die game. We've held our own in the group stage. Can the MLS teams hold their own in a knockout stage, which sometimes they can and do in the Champions League? But you also can't forget how important it is that these games are all being played on U.S. soil. That's gonna throw in a little bit of a wrench here. Charlotte is actually going to have to play their game all the way in Dallas. Did you see that? Because apparently there is a pre-scheduled thing at Bank of America Field, and they couldn't find a stadium closer. So they have to go out to Dallas to play their knockout stage game.
That's wild to me, only because it's like there's a lot of stadiums around there. Like, I don't know, that's really weird. Like, they couldn't find a college football stadium or something.
Yeah, I guess they were probably all starting to practice and stuff too.
I guess, yeah.
All right, but if you want to follow us and reach out to us at Stateside Show on Facebook, Twitter, X, whatever the hell it's called now. We have Instagram and Threads at Stateside Show. And yeah, you can reach us there. Thank you all for watching and listening along with us. We will catch you next time as we talk probably some of the fallout with the Women's World Cup, if the U.S. happen to move on or not in the next week or so. And we'll reevaluate from there, and we'll talk some of these round of 32 games, which probably by the time we record, we'll actually be talking like round of 16 for the League's Cup. But thank you all once again. We'll catch you next time.